From Ancient Greece to Iraq, The Power of Words in Wartime by Robin Tolmach Lakoff. An American soldier refers to an Iraqi prisoner as it. A general speaks not of Iraqi fighters, but of the enemy. A weapons manufacturer doesn't talk about people, but about targets. Bullets and bombs are not the only tools of war. Words, too, play their part. Human beings are social animals, genetically hardwired to feel compassion toward others. Under normal conditions, most people find it very difficult to kill. But in war, military recruits must be persuaded that killing other people is not only acceptable, but even honorable. The language of war is intended to bring about that change, and not only for soldiers in the field. In wartime, language must be created to enable combatants and non-combatants alike to see the other side as killable, to overcome the innate queasiness over the taking of human life. Soldiers, and those who remain at home, learn to call their enemies by names that make them seem not quite human, inferior, contemptible, and not like us. The specific words change from culture to culture and war to war. The names need not be obviously demeaning. Just the fact that we can name them gives us a sense of superiority and control. If, in addition, we give them nicknames, we can see them as smaller, weaker, and childlike, not worth taking seriously as fully human. The Greeks and Romans referred to everyone else as barbarians. Etymologically, those who only babble only go barbar. During the American Revolution, the British called the colonists Yankees, a term with a history that is still in dispute. While the British intended it disparagingly, the Americans, in perhaps the first historical instance of reclamation, made the word their own and gave it a positive spin, turning the derisive song Yankee Doodle into our first, if unofficial, national anthem. In World War I, the British gave the Germans the nicknames Jerrys from the first syllable of German. In World War II, Americans referred to the Japanese as Japs. The names may refer to real or imagined cultural and physical differences that emphasize the ridiculous or the repugnant. So, in various wars, the British called the French frogs. Germans have been called krauts, a reference to weird and smelly food. The Vietnamese were called slopes and slants. The Koreans were referred to simply as gooks. The war in Iraq has added new examples. Some American soldiers refer to the Iraqis as Hajis, used in a derogatory way, apparently unaware that the word, which comes from the Arabic term for pilgrimage to Mecca, is used as a term of respect for older Muslim men. The Austrian ethologist Konrad Lorenz suggested that the more clearly we see other members of our own species as individuals, the harder we find it to kill them. So some terms of war are collective nouns, encouraging us to see the enemy as an undifferentiated mass, rather than as individuals capable of suffering. Crusaders called their enemy the Sarrakin, and in World War I, the British called Germans the Hun. American soldiers are trained to call those they are fighting against the enemy. It's easier to kill an enemy than an Iraqi. The word enemy itself provides the facelessness of a collective noun. Its non-specificity also has a fear-inducing connotation. Enemy means simply those we are fighting, without reference to their identity. The terrors and uncertainties of war make learning this kind of language especially compelling for soldiers on the front. But civilians back home also need to believe that what their country is doing is just and necessary, and that the killing they are supporting is in some way different from the killing in civilian life that is rightly punished by the criminal justice system. The use of the language developed for military purposes by civilians reassures them that war is not murder. The linguistic habits that soldiers must absorb in order to fight make atrocities like those at Abu Ghraib virtually inevitable. the same language that creates a psychological chasm between us and them and enables American troops to kill in battle, makes enemy soldiers fit subjects for torture and humiliation. The reasoning is, they are not really human, so they will not feel the pain. Once language draws that line, all kinds of mistreatment become imaginable, and then justifiable. To make the abuses at Abu Ghraib unthinkable, we would have to abolish war itself.